Support comes from the Rosa Parks Museum on Troy University's Montgomery campus. Located on the spot of Mrs. Parks' historic 1955 arrest and featuring exhibits that chronicle the history of the Montgomery bus boycott. More information at troy.edu/Rosa Parks.
From Troy Public Radio, this is In Focus, and I'm Carolyn Hutchison. Today, in our book series, The Storyline, reporter Jeremy Gray talks about one of the nation's most sensational crimes, the 1969 Manson murders, and convicted killer Patricia Krenwinkel's ties to Mobile. Jeremy is the author of the book Wicked Women of Alabama, and he joined us by Skype. Jeremy Gray, thanks for joining us again on In Focus.
Glad to be here.
Back to why you wrote this book. Was it due to all of your years as a night reporter chasing cases of violence?
You know, I think it even goes back to my childhood. I grew up in a house where we got, I think, 2 daily papers and a couple of weekly papers, and the TV evening news was always on, and my parents were fascinated with lurid crime cases. So, yeah, I can just remember, even at an early age, my parents talking about things that were going on in Alabama and nationally. I've just always had that fascination since childhood.
We're talking about lurid crime stories. One of the most infamous cases that is covered in your book is that of Patricia Krenwinkel and the Charles Manson family. Catch us up to date on what happened and her Alabama ties.
Well, Patricia Krenwinkel lived in Los Angeles, and she moved to Mobile, Alabama as a teen. She attended Theodore High School for a while. She came back, and she attended Spring Hill College, which some listeners may recall, may be familiar with. And in 1967, she went back to California, and at some point just kind of dropped out from society and met up with the Manson family. From there, her life took a very horrible turn.
She has been quoted in your book as saying that a psychiatrist said she was very much afraid that Manson would track her down and kill her. She was also described as psychotic at the time of the murders. Get us up to date on those murders.
Well, these are the LaBianca Tate murders from 1969. She was known to have participated along with Tex Watson, Linda Caspian, in August of 1969. She, along with several members of the Manson family, dropped acid on August 8th. They went for a drive, supposedly with no intention of harming anyone, but they ended up at Sharon Tate's home. She was the actress who was married to filmmaker Roman Polanski. She was 26. She was pregnant. She was there along with her friend, J.C. Brink, who was a famous hairdresser and a native of Birmingham, Alabama, the coffee heiress Abigail Folger, and an aspiring screenwriter and friend of Polanski was there as well, as was an 18-year-old who was visiting the estate. Supposedly, Patricia Krenwinkel took credit for the murder of Abigail Folger, stabbing her multiple times. And the next night, there was the murders of the LaBiancas, the grocery store owners. She took credit for killing Rosemary LaBianca and carving the word war in her husband's chest and writing several words on the walls of the house in blood, rise to the death to the pigs, and helter skelter, which was the name of the famous book about the Manson murders.
Wasn't the property owned by Terry Melcher, who was Doris Day's son, and Manson was after a music career? Is that the story?
I know he had musical aspirations. He had met up with one of the members of the Beach Boys. As far as who owned the house, I'm not completely clear on that.
Jeremy, Patricia Krenwinkle has been incarcerated for more than 50 years. So where is she serving her sentence?
California.
I understand that last May 26, she was granted parole at the age of 74, yet by that fall, Governor Gavin Newsom had blocked her parole. Has she ever expressed any feelings about her role in the Manson murders?
Well, she, in a 2011 parole hearing, she said that young people, quote, seem to think that what we did was all right. There is nothing that we did that is all right. I'm just haunted each and every day by the unending suffering of the victims, the enormity and degree of suffering I've caused. I'm so ashamed of my actions. The victims had so much life left to live.
She, as I understand from your book, earned a college degree while she was in prison. And she did various things like help on the prison softball team and train some inmates to fight fires. Jeremy, have you met any of these women you wrote about in this book?
I have not. I tried writing to all of them. I did not get responses. I got responses from a few of the males who were involved in these cases. And I've talked to family members of victims and other people associated with the cases, prosecutors, defense attorneys. The family members I'm speaking of actually were family members of victims, really, more so than the family members of the culprits themselves.
You know, families are left with the aftermath of these murders of their loved ones. What have you found in talking with them?
Well, you're right. There's an enormity of loss. You know, the most recent murder in the book occurred in 1993, so there's been some time for healing and for people to move on as best you can in light of a tragedy such as these folks endured. In one case, the very last case I write about, there was a police officer in Opelika who was killed, and I spoke to his widow, and she was, I would say, almost surprisingly sympathetic to the woman, Linda Block, who was executed for her husband's death. I don't think she questioned really the sentence, but she, I think, at times did feel bad that she was there alone and at the very end. Judith Ann Neely, I spoke to a family member of one of the victims there. Her sentence was commuted by a former Alabama governor, and that's still a source of great anger for the family.
That brings us to other cases that you have talked about in your book, Wicked Women of Alabama, that we haven't had time to cover, but that the listeners can catch up on. Who are some of those other cases?
Marie Hilly, the Black Widow of Anniston. Hazel Ferris, who really, there's no real evidence that she committed any crimes whatsoever. She was a woman from my hometown of Bessemer, Alabama, who died in an apparent suicide, and her body was mummified as a result, and she was displayed for decades. And I think in order to get people to pay to see her body, someone concocted a story that she had killed five police officers in Kentucky and taken her own life as law enforcement closed in on her. There's really no evidence that I've been able to find that any of that happened, but it was this legend that followed her around for about a century. There was the torso murderer, Viola Hyatt, in East Alabama, who was convicted of murdering and dismembering two men in the 1950s on her family's property in East Alabama. Betty Wilson, who was convicted of hiring a hitman to kill her husband, who was a well-known eye doctor in Huntsville. She and her twin sister were both tried. Her twin sister was acquitted, and she was convicted. So those are a few of the cases.
Well, Jeremy, as a crime reporter, you have written a page-turner. I could not put your book down. Thank you so much, Jeremy, for joining us by Skype from Moody, Alabama.
I appreciate you having me on, and I enjoyed talking with you.
Joining us by Skype was Jeremy Gray, reporter and author of the book Wicked Women of Alabama. Thanks for joining us today for our book series, The Storyline on In Focus, which is a podcast wherever you get your podcasts. I'm Carolyn Hutchison, and this is listener-supported Troy Public Radio.